Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on this week's program.
There is a huge market out there. There's some new technologies and ability for people to connect in a way that's very different than we could do 10 to 15 years ago.
We tackle the issue of shared mobility from the success stories in Italy to how e-scooters have taken over the cobblestone streets of Lisbon. Plus, mobility for all, the car sharing app putting senior citizens first, and why New York's mayor, Bill de Blasio, calls electric bicycles one of his city's biggest dangers. That's all coming up right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. So, welcome to this week's programme. Let's start in New York City, where over the past couple of months, there's been a row over the legislation for electric bicycles. The mayor thinks that they will make New York streets more dangerous, but some councils and businesses, such as food delivery workers, see them as a positive change. Our America's editor-at-large, Ed Stocker, joined me in the studio to explain it all.
Ed, I think you and me are kind of like transport correspondents. We went to a nice transport convention in Los Angeles. Now I've got you talking about your home city, New York. Ed's normally sat in New York for us. He's here in London. And we're on the same topic. It's electric scooters, bikes. And New York's getting itself in a bit of a mess over this. What's going on?
It is. We're e-mobility expert these days, aren't we? It is indeed. Basically, it all boils down to e-bikes, or electronic bikes. Basically, the mayor, Bill de Blasio, has taken a sort of tough stance. He said not so long ago that e-bikes were a threat to neighbourhood residents. And he's kind of copped a bit of controversy by people saying he's meant to be a progressive mayor, and yet he seems to be coming down on the side of sort of richer residents of wealthier neighbourhoods who think they're a bit of an eyesore. There's been a change in legislation fairly recently, and now pedal-assisted bikes, we're going to get into the weeds here, Andrew, pedal-assisted bikes have now been legalised in New York City. Those are slightly slower than throttle bikes. And that means that Citibike will be rolling out these pedal-assisted bikes, essentially, you know, normal bikes that give you a bit of a sort of electric boost later this year, some 4,000 of those. But the throttle bikes are still illegal, although there's a growing call amongst the city council and possibly even in the state for those to be legalised. The throttle bikes are the delivery bikes that you see sometimes causing mayhem around New York City, I'm not going to lie. As a cyclist, I have sort of confronted one of these bikes turning around the corner the wrong way and coming into my bike lane, and they do go up to about 28 miles an hour, so that can be slightly scary. Those may be some of the reasons why there's been some resistance to them being legalised, but they tend to be used, largely by the immigrant community, who are the people who largely make these deliveries, and the fact that they're being fined or having their bikes confiscated is obviously taking away their livelihood. And at the same time, there's a feeling that de Blasio and his team haven't really provided much of a reason to say why these types of bikes are more dangerous than the pedal-assisted type of bike. There is, it seems, going to be a decision actually made by the state governor, Andrew Cuomo. And it seems like he may end up saying that it's up to individual municipalities to decide what to do about all of this.
And we should say, for anybody who got at all kind of whizzed off onto the pavement during that discussion, that even New Yorkers seem utterly confused by it. Now, this was a city that was a good early adopter of the likes of Lyft and Uber. And one of the things about Manhattan, I guess, and Brooklyn, of course, is this culture of like, we want it now, deliver quick. So the delivery culture is important in New York. It's really taken off. Perhaps you could just give us a hint of the streetscape, the cityscape. How many delivery vehicles, how many delivery scooters? Is it awash with people running around, running errands?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously you've got, you know, Uber Rush, you've got a lot of, you know, New Yorkers, you know, there's the sort of old adage or kind of a bit of a cliche that no one actually cooks in their homes in New York City, and everyone is ordering takeout most of the week. there is a large culture of ordering food, and so there is a big sort of population, whether they're on bicycles or these throttle bikes who are delivering food around the city. I think you've got to add to that that, you know, it's not one of those big sprawling cities with wide streets, although obviously some parts of Manhattan do have wider streets than we're accustomed to, say, in London. But the infrastructure is not that great. Going back to the fact that I'm a cyclist, you know, a lot of these vehicles do end up for the moment until there's clearer legislation using bike lanes. And there are a lot of bike lanes that aren't separate from traffic. There are a lot of bike lanes that are full of potholes. And so imagine having electric vehicles or vehicles that have a battery in them and can go faster than these conventional pedal modes of transport, you know, shooting down these lanes, hitting potholes and all sorts of things. The thought for someone who lives in New York City of seeing more of these quicker types of transport in a city that is clogged with traffic and has some pretty terrible drivers as well is slightly scary for me, unless they're able to come up with a better way of sort of creating the infrastructure for this to work more seamlessly.
And the other thing is, I guess, New York at the moment, lots of people seem to be losing faith in the subway system. They feel that there's too many delays. And again, if you want to get around on these kinds of vehicles as a commuter, is that another appeal of them, do you think? That there is this pressure through slightly failing services?
I mean, I think that's definitely true. I mean, I think that's, it's hard to know. It's a bit of a chicken and egg in some ways because, you know, ridership is down on the subway. Is it because people think it's so bad that they're taking alternative Ubers or Lyfts, you know, these ride shares? Or is it because it's just more convenient to do that and that's the reason why it's falling? But certainly, as we saw in Los Angeles, people are using these sorts of new modes of transport, certainly for shorter legs, because it's more convenient than having to hop in the subway or in a car. So there's no reason why New Yorkers wouldn't want to do the same thing. It's just maybe a slightly trickier panorama in New York City to do that.
That was Monocle's America's editor-at-large, Ed Stocker. Over the years at Monocle, we've covered multiple mobility solutions. Ooh, try saying that after a few drinks. But what we've always identified is that most car hailing, bike sharing and dockless scooter companies seem to have one thing in common. That's that they target a very specific demographic. What about senior citizens, for example? This was the premise behind the company Mobility for All, a ride-sharing startup aimed solely at the over-65s. Monocle's Carlotta Rubella caught up with the CEO, John Doan. Let's listen in.
Mobility for All is the kinder, gentler ride service for seniors and people with disabilities. We work directly with seniors and their senior living facilities to provide them with a premium level of door-through-door service so that they can live their life with independence and freedom that they used to have before they lost the ability to drive.
Now, what is interesting here is, of course, you're tapping into a market that when we think about these new mobility solutions that are showing up in cities, they all seem that they're all targeting a younger generation. You only need to think about the scooters, for example, and who would use them. Was that a conscious decision to try and tap into a market that is a completely different end of the spectrum?
Very much so. This is a market that is continuing to grow, particularly in developed countries like the UK, the US, Japan. I should also mention Russia and a number of other countries. The population of seniors continues to grow at an astronomical rate because, at least in the U.S., the baby boomer generation is just coming into retirement age. And so here in the U.S., there are forecasts that the population of seniors 65 and older will double in the next 10 years. So it's a huge market, and there's a huge need as well. Mobility for All was created from a need that we saw with our own families. Myself, it relates to my brother Roy and my mom, Kim. They both are in a situation now where they're not able to drive, and I have become not only their primary caregiver, but also their chauffeur. And we wanted to solve for that because there's a huge market out there. There's some new technologies and ability for people to connect in a way that's very different than we could do 10 to 15 years ago. And so we're using and leveraging that technology in order to provide more independence and freedom for people with disabilities and seniors.
Now, for our listeners to get a better idea of how the app works in real terms, are we talking here about an Uber-like style, or is it more of a booking service? How does it work in practical terms?
We have been called Uber for seniors, and we do have a mobile app, but we also have a web interface, as well as, and this is an important feature for our customers, we have a call center for them to reach a live person, or if they want to use text messaging or the automated phone system to book a ride very quickly, we have systems in place to do that as well. How it works is that Mo, which is the name of our platform, and also it's short for mobility, Mo matches rides for riders who need reliable on-demand door-through-door service with our fully vetted network of trained drivers. Our platform offers enhanced caregiver involvement, which means that a caregiver, whether it's a family member, a neighbor, or the concierge at a senior living facility, can help to curate or to track and help the rider with all aspects of the trip. We also have an option for the rider to choose their favorite driver, because it's important for us to build a relationship between the rider and the driver, because that's how you build trust, respect, as well as a higher level of service. You probably noticed that if you've used Uber, that rarely, if ever, you would get the same driver. We want to change that paradigm so that we have a relationship between the rider, the driver, and their trusted caregiver that the rider brings along to the relationship or to the trip. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we have multiple booking channels, because our users, many of them, while they may have a smartphone, may not be their preferred way to book a trip.
You mentioned that you have partnerships with retirement homes, etc. But imagine if you are a senior citizen that you just simply live on your own at your own home. Can you still use it? Or right now, the way things are working, it's through these specific partnerships?
That's a great question. But just to loop back with your previous question about how you interact with the Mo platform and our brokerage, it's very important that we have a call center. But just as important is having that caregiver involvement. That's another key differentiator for our service, because what we found is that that caregiver many times will book the ride. They're the actual interface with our system on behalf of their loved one or the person that lives at their senior living facility. And so the idea or the approach of having a trusted caregiver that represents and that helps the rider is key to our platform. With regard to your question about if you need to live at a senior living facility versus living independently and aging in place, right now our service is primarily focused on seniors who are living in a senior living facility, but we do have plans in the next 3 to 6 months to expand that service so that individuals who are living independently can access our service.
That was John Doan of Mobility for All, speaking to Monocle's Carlotta Ribello. Since we're talking about ride-hailing services, let's turn the focus to Milan. The mayor has recently introduced legislation to limit circulation in the city, despite the popularity of these rides. Monocle's Chiara Ramella caught up with our man in Milan, Ivan Carvalho.
When you look at the numbers, Milan is very impressive compared to the rest of the country. One in three, actually, Milanese are actually signed up for one of the services, and there's now over half a dozen of these car-sharing projects, including also electric vehicles. So you have to go to a place where these e-cars are plugged in, and then also people leave. You know, now the system is set up where you can leave a car at a certain point, a place, wherever you're going for your business in the city limits. And locals seem to like it a lot. I mean, of course, the downtown area is quite tight in terms of the streets, and as of 2012, we here in Milan had the first congestion charge was put in place in the sort of historic center, and that reduced traffic about, the numbers that people talk about usually are around 30% less. And so you see now this movement towards people adopting this, and also there are also scooters as well as a service that is being provided. So the Milanese are now, there's about 4,000 cars in the fleet of these different providers.
So it seems to me like the citizens do take to these services fairly enthusiastically. Is there any amount of skepticism surrounding them, like we have seen perhaps in other cities where some of these shared vehicles have been vandalized by certain users?
The bike situation, you see, for example, the Chinese company with the bike service where people leave the bikes in the sidewalk and blocking people who have wheelchairs and young kids, people with strollers. For the cars, obviously, you know, people don't leave them on sidewalks, even though you can park on sidewalks in Italy. I've noticed that trend sometimes. But overall, I've heard very good things from people. Sometimes they bring wipes to clean the steering wheel. But I mean, I've usually heard, I would say, about 90% positive stories and the utility of getting around for these trips. And, you know, the city, some of the numbers that you see, most of the trips are about under 10 kilometers. But it's just younger people, in a lot of instances, 20, 30-year-olds using it to get around because they don't have access to a car themselves or able to own a car. So, and just for short trips where they perhaps bring some items, perhaps for an interview or for work. So you see the growth and you see interest and you see the city trying to push in this direction.
What about local government then? Is the mayor supportive of the initiative? What's City Hall's perspective on all this?
If you look at the current policy of Mayor Sala, we've seen another initiative being put into place just in the last few days. They call it Area B, which covers about 75% of the city. And he's trying to reduce entry into Milan of older vehicles, diesel and petrol cars made before 2006. And that will slowly kick up to 2009 so that there are less of these polluting cars being driven around the city. And it's, you know, it's quite ambitious, this initiative. You know, Milan, along with other cities in the north like Turin, suffer from a lot of pollution. It's partly because of the topography, because, you know, the Alps block some of the winds, and so in the industrial north you get this sort of haze that kind of builds up. So there are efforts being made to try to, at least on the local front, try to alleviate this problem. And I think when you talk to people in the street about breathing fresh air and their kids, it's an argument that tends to win the day. So I think these measures are appreciated by the locals. I remember in the recent past, on weekends sometimes, because of the smog levels, there were no traffic allowed on the streets. And that was kind of an eerie situation because these congestion charges, by the way, are typically run Monday to Fridays. That's the rule. But in the past, when there were sort of peak periods of poor air quality, the government stepped in and said, we need to stop non-essential traffic on the weekends. So if these measures, you know, continue and, you know, Milan's getting a fifth metro line, even though it's taking a bit longer than expected, I think these measures will help in terms of the air quality. And I think it's an argument that politicians can work well with local citizens.
So obviously blocking traffic does help with improving air quality. Can car sharing also help in this sense? And have the schemes that have been put in place helped in this sense so far?
I think so. I mean, at a certain point, because when you look at Milan, locals here are known to escape on the weekends. And so when you talk about expanding these kinds of services, that's sort of an element which is a bit more complex, because if people want to go away for a weekend and take the family, say a family of four, then it gets a bit more complicated. Of course, regional train service is still far, far behind. I mean, Italy is actually on the world stages, has been complimented for its, you know, high-speed rail service. There's actually two operators, a private and a public. But when it gets into the local infrastructure, local transport, those regional commuter trains, that's still a big, big problem that doesn't get a lot of attention. But commuters certainly are ready to talk about it. I think if that was to be improved, if we were able to see perhaps a dream of dreams, a sort of Swiss kind of level of infrastructure and transport links, I think here in Milan, in the Lombardy region, you would definitely see a jump in terms of quality of life and, of course, critically, the lower smog levels.
That was Ivan Cavallo, and he was speaking to our very own Chiara Rimella. When electric scooters first arrived in Lisbon, many thought this would finally become the solution to crossing such a steep, hilly city. But 6 months on, not all are happy in the Portuguese capital. Once again, here's Monocle's Carlotta Rebello.
Over the past decade, hundreds of cities across the globe started to slowly favour a clean approach to mobility. Local governments invested in cycling infrastructure, made the regulations for shared bikes to enter the market, and overall started a campaign to get people on two wheels. In Portugal, this narrative took a bit longer to take hold. It was a mixture between lack of vision and topography. This is, after all, traditionally a very hilly country. Take Lisbon, for example. The capital is a steep city, where encouraging locals to power their commute with their own two legs might be a good idea on the way down to the riverfront, but not so much on the way up.
Lisbon is a city in which there is a lot of traffic, so it's heavy from transportation point of view, and we want to help the city to be more lean, to be more light, and to give the possibility to the citizens of Lisbon to have more way to transport and to transport in an easier way.
This was the ideal setup for tech mobility companies to try and penetrate the market. And after the arrival of electric bikes, it was a turn of the e-scooters. The first of such kind, by San Francisco-based company Lime, arrived in Lisbon last September. Today, there are a total of 6 different companies and over 4,000 e-scooters on the streets. Competition is fierce between them, so they all operate similar prices. €1 to unlock your vehicle and 15 cents per minute during the ride. And many use green mobility and reducing pollution as their calling card. Despite all odds, the e-scooters have proved to be immensely popular among locals and tourists alike. Not only have they helped shorten distances and navigate through the city's hills, but they've also become the alternative for short commutes or when simply you're just going one way to a train station, event or the airport. Now, 6 months on from that very first e-scooter, the Paris effect has arrived to the Portuguese capital too. City Hall and some local authorities have raised concerns over what they call scooter pollution, many that are not parked properly or left on sidewalks and crosswalks. There's also the issue of vandalism, be it destroying the vehicle itself or using it to destroy public infrastructure. But at the beginning of the year, something peculiar happened. The Portuguese police started to stop scooter riders mid-drive and asking them to take a breathalyzer test. Arguing that despite all things, they were still riding a vehicle, the police caught a handful of riders that were over the legal alcohol amount and ended up fining them. Overall, there has been a wider crackdown by security forces to ensure that scooter drivers in Lisbon use them within the law. And this is from following road signs and stopping at traffic lights to not vandalizing the equipment and even the specific locations where they can park. There have also been public campaigns to remind users that they need to wear a helmet, even though in reality most of them don't, or that it's illegal to drive while on your mobile phone, which most of them do. After complaints by residents to City Hall, some things have started to shake up. The local authorities issued guidelines to create specific drop-off and parking locations across Lisbon, and also made cycle lanes the priority roads for scooters. Last December, Madrid gave a 72-hour ultimatum to scooter-sharing companies for not complying with the city's rules. Perhaps Lisbon should look towards its neighbor's capital and follow the same example if things get out of control. For Monocle, I'm Carlotta Ribello.
It's almost time to head off, but before we do, let's turn the focus to Finland. The Helsinki City Bike Scheme has been a success since it was launched 3 years ago. For our correspondent in the city, Petri Burtsov, it was all about changing people's habits. And now, a new platform wants to reinvent the way that people think of their commute, too. He spoke to Monocle's Carlotta Ribello.
They tried the city bikes in Helsinki, I think it was about 10 and 15 years ago, and it was a big failure. You know, the bikes were bad quality, and people just kind of stole them and dropped them off wherever. And now, it started 2 years ago, they restarted the whole, relaunched the whole program. The bikes are very high quality, Finnish design. They're all done through this app, and there's a lot of docking stations all over the city, strategically placed. And people are very happy to use them, and especially in the summer months, you see these yellow bikes roaming around the city all over the place.
Now, we're talking here about bikes that are managed by the city, not a private company, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Do you think that has contributed to its success? Because we keep reading and seeing these stories about different startups and companies trying to break into the market in different cities across the world. And it's just too much competition. And perhaps Helsinki did something right here by having their own scheme and people just seem to stick to that one.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there, Carlos. I think the fact that this scheme is run by the city really helps integrate the bike scheme into other forms of public transportation. So it's been planned really well that you can drop off your bike and then you can jump on a tram or on a train or even on a ferry to take you to the islands. And they're all kind of coordinated in a way that it forms a seamless whole for your travel. So I think it really helps that it's run by the city, yes.
Now, another aspect here when we talk about mobility is this new app called Wim. Tell me a bit more about that.
So yeah, Wim is quite a new thing. I think it launched last year in Helsinki and it's growing super fast. It's also launched in the UK and in Belgium. It's basically a digital service in the so-called mobility as a service sphere. So basically one app that integrates all forms of transportation, whatever is most fit for your needs. So, you know, depending on where you are and where you want to go, the app shows you that, hey, how about you take a bike from here and then you'll continue in a taxi, or you can even use a shared car if you go somewhere else. And it's all done via this app. You pay a monthly subscription. It's 50 euros at the moment, and you can just use all of the forms of public transportation for an unlimited number of times. So it's growing really fast and it's really popular here.
This app has won a number of awards, not only for itself as a startup, but also for its design. Where you are, do you see that people are increasingly using it more and more instead of the traditional payment methods?
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the great things about this app is that it actually includes taxis, but it includes taxis for a lot cheaper than the taxi price would be in Helsinki otherwise. So I've seen a lot of friends that have signed into this app in the past couple of months. It's growing really fast.
Now, what's interesting about the two stories we talked about here, initially the city bikes and then this app, is that both seem to be received quite well by the population. What do you think makes locals so receptive to these new forms of mobility?
I think it comes down to design and how it's done. You know, Finns are very design-minded people. We like things that are done well and that function really well. And the city bike scheme is a good example. When it was done last time, it wasn't done properly, so almost nobody used it. So it's not like we are inherently prone to always use these new kinds of things. They just need to be done well, and we are kind of by nature early adopters when things are done well, I would say.
Well, that's all for this very whizzy episode of The Urbanist. The show was produced by Carlotta Ribello and it was edited by David Stevens. And to play you out of this episode of The Urbanist, here's Curtis Mayfield with Move On Up. Thank you for listening, city lovers.
Just move on.